Hello and welcome back to the Life Sciences Podcast. I'm Greg Council. This week's episode is a bit of a departure from our usual format, as we're bringing you a full interview with geneticist Professor Steve Jones. Now, until recently, Professor Steve Jones was the head of Genetics, Evolution and Environment at University College London. He's also dedicated a lot of his career to improving the public understanding of science. And in 2011, Professor Jones was asked by the BBC to write a report on their impartiality in the way they report on science. Now, this report was 103 pages long, so it's not the sort of thing that you'd pick up for a spot of light reading. But as I was reading through it, I realised there were some very important points being made, like important points for scientists and non-scientists alike. So, when I heard Professor Jones was coming to give a lecture at the University of Manchester, we arranged to interview him. Now, I apologise for the sound quality, but it was recorded at a rather noisy post-lecture soiree. But his comments about the relationship between science and the media are important things to consider, whether you're a science student listening to this, thinking about your future as a scientist, or whether you have no science background at all. This is important because it gives you some perspective and shows that you should have a healthy level of skepticism about some of the things that you see in the media. So I hope you enjoy it. In terms of balance in the media, do you think more journalists need science training, or do you think we should be encouraging actual science students, science graduates, to go into like careers in journalism?
Well, I think both are true. I mean, in the real world, I have to say, science journalism is a very, very crowded field. I mean, I know lots and lots of students who want to become science journalists. What I did was I wrote a report for the BBC Trust, which is the managing board of the BBC, about balance in science broadcasting. It was a very interesting experience. First of all, an awful lot of BBC science broadcasting is absolutely first rate, there's no question about it. But there are real problems, and they're problems that have to do not with misunderstanding science, but much more with understanding the way that science is done, and what I would maybe call the culture of science. And that's particularly true in news coverage. Because if you have a news item on almost anything, politics, sport, whatever, what you've always got is somebody who's got one opinion talking about it versus somebody who's got a different opinion talking about it. And the BBC is kind of obsessed with that. So if they've got a Labour politician talking, then they've got to have a Tory politician and so on. Okay. And for politics, I can see that. But science isn't like that. You can't have a situation where somebody's telling you what the science is about, giving you the facts on a particular subject, and somebody else then comes in and says, oh, I don't think that's true. And this is what they do all the time. A classic example being in global warming. 99% of the scientific community agrees that global warming has taken place. The vast majority of that 99% thinks it has due to human activity. And yet, every single time you have a global warming piece, without exception, you have a global warming denier speaking against it. And their only qualification is their opinion. They don't think it's taking place. They haven't got any evidence at all, but they don't think it's taking place. So if you ask the public, 40% of the public don't think it's taking place. Now, that to me isn't balanced. That's the opposite.
If you've got like a newspaper or a news channel that doesn't have a specific science editor who knows about the scientific process and knows how peer review works and things, how would they tell someone that's just come in with an opinion and with an agenda, how would they tell them apart from someone with legitimate...
I think that's a good question. I mean, because they don't know the way that things work, they often don't. You know. What they also don't realise is that most of science is based on consensus. You know, science is like the tide coming in. At the edge of the sea, there's all kinds of surf and waves and rocks being thrown about. But behind it is deep blue water. And only very, very occasionally is there a tsunami that destroys everything that's there. That happened in physics in 1904, when the head of the Royal Society said to the physicists of Britain, listen, give it up. We know all about physics. We know the way the universe works. We know the way the atom works. We've got nothing more to find out. Go and do something more interesting. 1905, Einstein, relativity, quantum theory, the whole of physics collapsed. And that can happen. But it doesn't happen very often. But the trouble with much science reporting is that they assume it happens all the time, but it doesn't. But on the specific case of not being a scientist, I don't think that matters. What's much more important is to be a good journalist. There are, you know, if you look at the broadsheet newspapers, most of which have got science coverage, most of which is good. Many of the news coverage by science journalists is first rate. Most of it's first rate. But they're not all scientists. One of the very best who's still around was a guy who wrote for the Guardian newspaper called Tim Radford. Okay. And Tim Radford was absolutely not a scientist. He had a degree in English. And he had been an arts reporter. He still writes a little bit, and he writes beautifully, just a beautiful, beautiful writer. And he was one of the best of all science reporters, yeah. Because, you know, he just listened to the story and tell you what was happening. And I mean, I've often broadcast on the radio and I've interviewed scientists, and there most of them are awful because they can't put across a simple story.
Yeah.
If this and but that, and when I did this experiment, what experiment, they just can't communicate. So you need a communicator as much as you need a scientist.
If you read something and you're not really sure where it's coming from, you're not really fully convinced by it, and I wanted to go and read the actual source material, do you think they should, access to journals should be...
Well, I mean, that's a difficult issue. I mean, we're in a very peculiar position now, that what happens with the commercially produced science journals, which are fantastically valuable, they make literally tens or hundreds of millions of pounds a year, these things. What's happening is the taxpayer is paying scientists to do expensive science, discover results. The scientists sometimes now have to pay the journals to publish it, and the journals then charge the libraries to publish this publicly funded work, making a huge amount of money on the side.
Yeah.
The whole system, as of course you know, is now electronic. So people now have electronic access to these journals, which is fantastically helpful, but costs a university like Manchester many hundreds of thousands of pounds, if not £1 million a year.
Mm.
So there's a desperate attempt to get away from this, which is beginning to work. First of all, there are lots of journals which are free. Now, they're just online. Secondly, an awful lot of people, an awful lot of scientists, and this infuriates the rich journal owners, they take advantage of the fact that they, the scientists, own the copyright, the legal right to their results.
Mm.
So what they can do is publish the paper in the journal and also put it on their university webpage.
Right.
And that's happening more and more. And that is what, in the end, is going to kill these parasites, and they are parasites, who are leeching off science. But at the moment, if you're a member of the general public, it's still quite hard to get access to the actual scientific papers. But if you do, what you'll find is you probably won't understand it. Because, you know, scientists are talking to science, and we're talking the special scientees, which only a few scientists understand.
I mean, that's something that does bother me a bit, to think I've got 1 year left of university. If I don't go on to do a PhD or something, I will no longer have access to this that I have at university.
Well, it is changing. You mean the web of science and the like?
Yeah, yeah.
It is changing, but it's changing slowly.
As a nation, compared to other countries around Europe and all around the world, how do you think we're doing in terms of public understanding?
In terms of science,
yeah.
Until very recently, we did remarkably well. Britain represents 1% of the world's population. It publishes 10% of the world's scientific papers. If you look at the distribution of links and references to scientific papers, there are several centres in the world. The United States, of course, is the biggest one.
Yeah.
Second biggest one is Britain. The third biggest one is Japan. The fourth biggest one is Germany. And you're not going to, you know, there's no other endeavour which Britain comes second to the United States and ahead of all the rest of the world. So in that sense, we do extraordinarily well. How long that's going to continue is another question. In terms of public understanding, we do much less well. There are various organisations that go around the world asking the population questions, simple questions about science.
Yes.
You know, are electrons bigger than atoms? That kind of stuff. And we don't do all that well. I think in the world stakes, we come in about number 16. The United States, on the other hand, comes in about number 28.
Right.
Because there's a lot of extremely ignorant and badly educated people in the US. So I think we should and could do a lot better in public understanding of science.
Well, that's it for this week. So thanks for joining us, and tune in next time for another episode of the Life Sciences Podcast. This podcast was written, produced, and presented by Greg Council and edited by Matthew Cobb.